You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
What's up? Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight and for the rest of the week. Musical chairs, this is what happens around this time of the year. You know, people are taking vacation, and so Carlin filling in on other shows, and I'm stepping in for the 7 to 10 hour right here on 98.7 ESPN. We've got Nikki back in the studio. Nikki, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. Each and every show, I pretty much talk about my pandemic groove. Hopefully we all have found ours. Played a little tennis today. Took a spin class outside on a baseball field. Doing what we can in this pandemic world, trying to stay healthy and happy. So it's all that matters, staying healthy and happy. So Kyrie is also working the show. We've got a great show lined up for you. At least I think we do. Bram Weinstein, good friend of mine, is going to be joining us from Washington. I was really expecting Washington. Can I say Redskins? Aren't you like that Washington team?
I keep saying the team from Washington. The team. Okay. From okay. I'm just that, waiting that, for the new
you know,
name to get unveiled.
That team from Washington. That wink, team. Wink. Even if. Because I've spent the last 3 hours prepping for the show, and even if you go to ESPN, if you go to ESPN.com and you put your little mouse, the little finger over NFL, it will show you all the divisions and all the teams and their logos, and it just says Washington, and there's not even a logo next to it. So it's Dallas Cowboys, Giants, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles, and then it just says Washington with no logo. So ESPN has even removed the Redskins from its website again. Like so, yeah. So I guess we should really be promoting Bram as that dude in Washington coming on to talk about that Washington NFL team, because truly, I was teasing on Twitter that I was going to be in for Carlin tonight, and I was like, do I write Redskins? Should I? No. I mean, it's like it's one of those things now, right? Don't you agree?
No, I completely agree. Yeah.
So let's listen. This is Adam Schefter. And again, the big reason I booked Bram, like I want to say on like Sunday night, because I thought by now we would know the new name. This is Adam Schefter on the timeline. When will we know that nickname for, that Washington team?
Our ESPN NFL Nation reporter John Kimes said it has to do with trademark issues, but I believe they've made a decision on the name. I believe they have the name, and I believe we're just waiting legal formalities here before they actually can announce that name. And that could come, I would think, as early as this week. Look, training camp is scheduled to start later this month. Whether it actually does is a whole other question. But they're going to want that name out there sooner. The sooner they can get it out, the more merchandise they could sell, frankly. And so, again, I think they know the direction that they're headed in. And it's just a question of when they legally can put the name out there.
So we're just waiting anxiously to figure out and find out what it is. Nikki and I were talking before the show. I know there were reports last week that Dan Snyder, owner of the Washington team, had trademarked Warriors. And I want to say, like, from what I understand, Nikki, it was a few years ago that he had trademarked Warriors. I came across a really great tweet over the weekend and with the suggestion of Red Tails, Washington Red Tails. Okay, well, what's the significance in that? The Red Tails were the first black military aviators, and they flew. They had over 15,000 missions in World War II. So the Washington Red Tails, and pretty cool, like the guys, the group that's suggesting it, put together this like really cool design and really cool graphics with these, World War II fighter planes that have Red Tails on them. There's actually, do you know that there's a great little cocktail bar, not that it's open right now, but there's a great little cocktail bar here in New York called Blacktail. Have you heard about it?
I've not. Do you know where it is?
Oh, yeah. Of course I do. I've been there several times. So it's in like near the financial district, and it's like on the Lower West Side, and it's literally right on the water. And the significance, you walk in, it's like a late night cocktail bar in the city, and it's open till like 3-4 o'clock. It's a great place to go and have like a after drink. Like, you know, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. You don't want to go home. You're not ready to go home yet, but you don't want to go to a club. You're not into clubbing. So you just want to go somewhere and you want to have like a great drink. And it's called Blacktail. And it's, so it's a cocktail bar and it's got this Cuban flair to it. You walk in, they mojitos, they serve all kind of like Cuban food and a lot of rum drinks. Well, during Prohibition, the only way that you could get to Cuba was flying on these water planes, and they were painted with a black tail. So when you were flying over the city of Manhattan, you were able to look up and say, "Oh, look at that black tail plane." And so there's a lot of history surrounding, and from what I understand, like Frank Sinatra and a lot of movie stars and a lot of celebrities would use this airline, Blacktail, during Prohibition to fly to Cuba. So anyway, I just kind of derailed. I'm sorry, not so sorry. It's always great to learn about really cool stuff in New York City. But anyway, it just reminded me of that. So Bram Weinstein is going to join us on the show at 7:30 to give us an update on what's going on with, you know, that Washington team and when we can expect to hear about their nickname. Also coming up at 8 o'clock on the show, Stefania Bell is going to join us. Very dear friend of mine, one of my best friends, and does a phenomenal job at ESPN. Excited to get her on the program for a number of reasons. Number one, the NFL and the NFLPA, they have to check the boxes. They have to get the health and safety protocols in order. And like now, because especially if we're anticipating the NFL players to arrive and start participating in training camp the end of this month, I find it very interesting. Like, even though we're living in this pandemic world, I don't know about you, but like time flies. I feel like March, when, you know, everything was turned upside down, was like, feels like it was just like a month ago. It's already July. I mean, time's flying. I mean, do you feel that way, Nikki? I'm curious. Do you feel like it's sands through an hourglass, or do you feel like it's absolutely flying by, the fact that it's July? We're almost mid-July right now.
I feel like the days drag by, but then I feel like the year is flying. So I feel like day by day, it feels so monotonous and things are going so slowly, but then I honestly can't believe the year is halfway over. Like, what have we done?
Yeah, and in all honesty, like, I think we're all ready for 2020 to be over. 2020 has not been a good year at all, for a number of reasons. But nonetheless, so the NFL and NFLPA had a meeting yesterday. And so we'll talk to Stefania Bell about some of the NFL protocols. She also has an article coming out in regard to the PGA Tour and how the PGA Tour is handling the coronavirus and their protocols. So, and I think that article drops tomorrow. So hopefully we'll get some nuggets prior to that article dropping. And also, Oakley has designed the special face shield for the NFL players. And one thing really true when it comes to Stefania Bell, she's on top of all the equipment. She has to be, you know, like, her specialty in regard to ESPN, specifically fantasy football, is all about players, injuries, assessing, evaluating, and really diving into player health and player safety. So we'll talk to her about this new Oakley face shield and what can that really do for a number of players. JJ Watt came out, by the way, and said, "I'm not wearing this. If I have to wear this, I'm not going to play this season." Okay. So excited to have Stefania Bell on the show. And then good friend of mine, Peter Jennings, who lives out in Denver, one of the best golf handicappers in the country, is going to join us at 9 o'clock. really excited to get him on. Tiger Woods, y'all. Tiger Woods is back at a practice round today at Muirfield Village, home of the Memorial. Now, very interesting this week because you had the Workday charity golf tournament that happened last week, and it was at the same golf course, right? So you've got to think, oh, well, you know, Morikawa won three-hole playoff with Justin Thomas. Hovland was up there. Why wouldn't you expect them to be active and attractive again this season? Well, the course changes. The course changes. Greens go from an 11 to a 13. What does that mean? It's speed. Higher the number, faster the green. Faster the green, more difficult to putt. So greens were at like an 11 this past week. They've been shaved down. Greens are going to roll at about a 13 this week. Rough. It's going to be real rough. They're going to let the rough grow almost 2 inches higher than what you saw this week. And also the tees are going to be moved back. So more distance. So the course is going to change. Not drastically, but it is going to change. And this is a tournament that Tiger Woods has been able to win 5 times in his career. This tournament, this course really fits Tiger's game to a T, but keep in mind, no pun intended, by the way, but keep in mind, this is the first tournament that Tiger Woods is. Can you hear the ice cream man outside my window, by the way?
I can't, but I think that's a sign of summer.
So I'm broadcasting from my living room. I always like to preface because you never know what you might hear. And of course, I have 5 dogs. So eventually, at some point in time within the next 3 hours, you're going to hear a dog, if not two, if not three, bark. So I just always like to preface the show. And it's so funny whenever I hear the sound of the ice cream truck. It just takes me back. It takes me back to when I was a kid. You know what I mean? And you were inside and you heard the ice cream truck go by and you were like, Mom, give me $1, please. And you ran outside and you got your favorite ice cream or bar or whatever it is from the ice cream truck. What a great time. Isn't it the simple things in life that when you go back and you think about when you were a kid, things that just made you so happy, right? And just imagine, I mean, Nikki, just imagine kids today, like I could just see it now. Mom, give me $1. Okay, don't forget your mask, Anita. So now you're handing your child $1. Well, actually, it's no longer $1. Who are we fooling? Mom, give me $5. So now it's $5. And oh, sweetheart, don't forget your mask to go to. Oh, my gosh. What we live in today, I tell you. I played tennis this afternoon. I was playing with a friend of mine and I turned to her at one point and I said, this is a movie. We're living in a movie. This is a screenplay for a movie. This isn't real life. It's just so wild. But anyway, back to Peter. Peter Jennings is one of the best golf handicappers in the business. We're going to have him on. We'll talk about the Memorial. Tiger Woods is back. What does that mean? More people are going to watch. It's the first tournament the Tiger is going to be playing in since the tour began again. I call it their pandemic pause, since the pandemic pause. So all eyes will be on the Memorial. All eyes will be on Tiger Woods. And does Peter think he can make some noise this weekend? So those are our guests. We'll have a click or don't click. And we'll have some fun because you guys will be calling in. You guys and gals will be calling in as well. 800-919-3776. When we get back, I want to dive in. This is another thing. Not only did I think that we'd have that Washington team's nickname today, I also thought that Dak Prescott would have a deal done today. And sure enough, right now, he does not. And I mean, we'll go into the 11th hour. That's a possibility, but we will dive into that next. Is Dak Prescott worthy of a deal to make him, let's say, the second or third highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Of course, we know Patrick Mahomes agreed to that $45 million a year. Whoa. So Russell Wilson is the second highest paid quarterback right now. And reports are that the deal that has been on the table for Dak Prescott from Jerry Jones and the Cowboys falls somewhere below Russell Wilson. But after Patrick Mahomes gets this deal done, even though Dak Prescott has never come anywhere close to the performance, let alone winning a Super Bowl, MVP season, MVP of the Super Bowl, like we saw Patrick Mahomes, typically, you know, players, not just quarterbacks, but in every position, you always want to one up the last guy. And that's what we've seen in the past few years.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
You could go back to keeping that name once they launch that review at a time like this in this country. There was pressure, yes, from FedEx and Pepsi and some of the other sponsors, the major sponsors like Nike that are associated with the Washington NFL franchise. But the fact of the matter is Dan Snyder had been engaged in discussions with the NFL for the last few weeks. They had been considering other names. And when they get the financial pressure in the times that we're living in and make that announcement in early July, the truth of the matter is there's no way they're going back to that name. We said last week that all Native American imagery would be out on any new nickname. And so what other choice? The only news today is the fact that they're actually making it official today and saying that that name, that nickname, will no longer be a part of the franchise.
That is Adam Schefter talking about that Washington team nickname. Without further ado, Bram Weinstein joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Good friend of mine from our nation's capital. Bram, how you doing?
Hey, Anita. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. I thought for sure today we would know what the nickname was. What's the holdup, you think?
So it's a few things, but I mean, frankly, I'm a bit surprised they're moving this quickly on it anyway. You know, what everybody really wants is just a disassociation. That happened. They retired it. Not to nitpick Adam Schefter's bite there, but the name, they retired it, which means it's going to be commemorated in some way, probably in whatever new facility they end up moving into in the next few years. Dan Snyder has died on the hill for this one big thing, which was the name of the team, saying he would never change it. And he's, you know, defended it for 20 years, and public pressure obviously has forced this situation. And as far as the change of nickname, you know, we're hearing that there's some trademark issues that they're dealing with because there were some people that had come along and squatted on a bunch of names. And so we have leaders in the clubhouse here of what we think it's going to be, but no one really knows the answer yet. So we're waiting, but there's a few that are out there and, you know, unfortunately for them, a couple of people got ahead of the game, trademarked it. And now the Redskins need to, or the Washington team needs to acquire it.
Interesting. Okay, so we know Warriors is something that Dan has trademarked
yes.
for a while now. So is that the leader in the clubhouse?
So there's like three right now. Warriors is one of them. And Warriors is partially because they had trademarked that some time ago, 8 to 10 years ago. And the goal was then actually to have an arena football team, and that's what the name would have been. And they would have worn the burgundy and gold colors that you're accustomed to. That never materializes. That league started to kind of evaporate, and then they decided having the team in the first place. And then at the end, actually, Ted Leonsis has put Arena Football League teams, not to get too far off track. So it would have been, you know, distinct competition here locally. Regardless, they've actually let that expire. So that is one of those that potentially could be troublesome if they want to acquire it. And secondarily, there are prominent leaders in the Native American community that are forcefully asking not to go anywhere near associating yourself again, and Warriors obviously would have that immediate association. So we feel like, or at least in my opinion, that's not the likely candidate that would end up happening here, although it is one that seems to make a lot of sense. The other two have the word red in it. Red Wolves, which frankly seems preposterous to me, but fine. That seems to have gained a lot of traction here. And Red Tails, which is a name that I don't know that I particularly like, but it does have a military DC association that goes back to the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II. And so they'd be honoring the military. They would be honoring a minority. And so they would go a complete opposite direction of what the representation of the team may be. You have to decide whether you like the name Red Tails. And you know, I think there is some feeling, at least among some, that people feel like that might be a leader because they want to keep some kind of connection to their past, and using the word red would help them do that.
Interesting. Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Explain, I understand Red Tails because I stumbled across that on social media over the weekend, and I did some research. Explain Red Wolves.
I can't. I don't even know if that exists. I mean, like, you know, Toronto named their basketball team after a mythical dinosaur that, you know, was in Jurassic Park. So, you know, I guess stranger things have happened, and I'm going to guess that Red Wolves do exist. But I know this, having lived just about my entire life in this region, I've never seen one nor heard of one or heard of a sighting of one. So I don't know why that is actually something that has gained popularity, but it's out there. And the truth is, we just kind of don't know. They've been very good at keeping the secret. If they do know what it is and they are just trying to get through the legal mechanisms of acquiring the trademarks correctly, then, you know, they've done a good job certainly of hiding it. But those are the three that have kind of been out there. And there's only, listen, a lot of people throwing out a lot of different things, like Americans. One, it's Washington, D.C. Two, it would be homage to first Americans, Native Americans. So there's a lot of names that are kind of out there. There's very DC-centric things, like you'll hear things like monuments or brigade as homage to all branches of the military. So there's a lot of different, I think, directions they could go, and we're just kind of waiting to find out what it is, but it has not gotten out. And I will go back to, like, kind of my original point. So this is like a multi-billion dollar brand who has been forced into changing their name. They were never having any real conversations about doing that. They were always going to push back and never really wanted to do it. So this is, their hand has been forced, and it feels like their hand has been forced very quickly here. And I'm not suggesting it's the wrong thing to do, but it is happening. Here's a multi-billion dollar brand that is going to ask anybody who has a graphic design degree to create a logo and then use it a week later. Like, that seems preposterous to me that they're going to do that. I don't know why they're not, and I think a lot of us feel this way here. Why not just taking their time? Like, they could disassociate from the name Redskins, not use it, be the Washington team for a while, and take their time and rebrand. Like, I don't know what the rush is, but apparently there is this rush to change it, and that's what we're going through right now.
Interesting. I'm really curious, Bram. Like, you know, now, you know, with Ron Rivera there, minority head coach, Dwayne Haskins drafted in the first round last year, all assuming, right, that he's coming in this year as the starter, given a shot to, you know, let's see what you got. So minority quarterback, minority head coach, and Dan is still, you know, hell-bent, oh, you know, I'm being forced to do this. It's not a good look, and I would imagine that it's an uncomfortable situation, no?
So you mean from, like, Haskins' perspective or Rivera's perspective?
Like just the whole thing. Like, okay, I'm the owner of, you know, the Washington team. I've got a minority head coach. I've got a minority quarterback. But yet I'm sticking with this, you know, derogatory name against Native America. Like,
I guess
it just looks weird. It just looks bad, Bram.
I don't disagree with you. I would just say, you know, from the insular perspective of this area, you know, like any of the very popular teams, and that team is the most popular here and has been for a very long time. You know, you'll see people wearing their clothing, their logo, their jerseys, all that type of stuff, bumper stickers, the whole thing. You know, runs the gamut. And I've never in my life encountered anything in this area where people looked at that and had this overarching feeling of racism. And I think that's really what's very tricky about this. It is more complicated. You know, if you really want to get into semantics, like, the reason why the team was named this was not the literal color of the skin, but nobody wants to hear that. It was like the red paint that was put on faces that were about to go into battle. But nobody wants to hear that because it's been defined as a slur, and I'm not defending it. Like, I'm not. But I think all football fans would agree with this. I would hope that, you know, Redskins fans collectively are not this group of secret racists that have been kind of harboring these horrible feelings about, you know, minorities. Like, I don't think it was ever meant that way. Anything that's ever written about the team never, goes in that direction. Everything is about tradition, honor, glory, fight, you know, nostalgia. It has nothing to do with any of the things that have projected on it. That's not to say that the word is not politically correct or incorrect to use and needs to be dealt with. But I think, intention does matter here. And of all the people, we've talked to tons of them, you know, who've either played for the organization, prominent players, Hall of Famers, coaches, all of them openly say, we've had an incident, you know, of course, in our lifetime where it came up outside of the region or it came up in something and it made things very uncomfortable. But largely inside the building, it wasn't something that anyone really even talked about. It wasn't treated as if it was some kind of pockmark and I don't want to play for them because they're that. No one ever intimated anything like that to us. Largely what we got from everybody, from the Hall of Famers on down to the guys who just play prominent roles on the team through the years, was we agree it's time to change. And they actually want to credit Dan Snyder for doing so. And they will all say that while they had moments with it, it wasn't something that really they thought about, talked about, or perceived really as a problem. And I think that's what's hard for a lot of us that are very attached to it, is we know what it meant and what it was supposed to mean, and it wasn't being taken that way. And that part is hard to kind of let go of. You know what I mean? That's the hard part to let go of it.
I hear you. Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Bram, before I let you go, thoughts on Dak Prescott. That's another thing. I thought two things today. Number one, there'd be an announcement in regard to the new Washington nickname. And also, too, I thought that we would have maybe not a finalized deal, but closer to a deal worked out between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. And I'm 0-2. Thoughts on Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys? You think he plays for you think he plays under that tag this year, or do you think a deal gets done in the 11th hour?
No, I think he plays on the tag this year, and I think he prefers it that way. He is going full Kirk Cousins. We lived this where they had an opportunity to express their love for him a couple of years ago, and they did not do it when the time was right to do it, and especially in light of the other deals that have occurred, not to even pretend that he's going to get anything near what Pat Mahomes got, but he certainly could ask for what Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers got. And you can make your own judgment whether you think he deserves that or not, but that's what he's in line to actually get. And if he waits it out even longer, wait till Deshaun Watson's contract comes up too. So considering he played last year on what was essentially a rookie minimum deal, I'm going to go with he's going to be okay playing for $30+ million this year. And when I heard that he was taking calls with Kirk Cousins in the offseason, I went, man, oh, man, the Cowboys don't know what they're about to walk into, because Washington got leveraged hard by him. You know, if he could play this out, play for $30+ million, they have to put the tag on him again or just let him go. They're not going to just let him walk, put it on him again. So it's like a 15% bump. He can play that out. They won't do a third one because they'll destroy their cap. And then he sits on the open market and he can take all offers, and he'll have pocketed $70+ million in 2 years. You tell me what deal he's going to get that actually makes sense right now, that is short of something in between Russell Wilson and Pat Mahomes. And if the Cowboys don't love him like that, they might as well just let this play out for a couple of years and figure out what happens on the other side of it, because I think he is wisely leveraging them. And he's basically saying, if you want me, I want a short-term deal. He's betting on himself that way, and I think it's the wise way to go.
Bram, you rock. Always appreciate your time. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Anita. See ya.
You got it. Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. And he makes excellent, excellent points about Dak Prescott. And like I said, you know, chances are in each team and each city are going to have their own decisions to make in regard to fan capacity. Jacksonville is saying 25%. Ravens are saying 14,000 fans. Philadelphia is saying no fans at all. Regardless, NFL is going to lose money. Cap's going to go down. Cap space is more than likely going to go down anywhere between $40 to $50 million when this whole pandemic thing is over.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight and all week, by the way, here on 98.7 ESPN. Without further ado, good friend of mine, Stefania Bell, you can see her all over ESPN, joins us now on 98.7 ESPN. Stefania, I miss you.
Same here. We posted that picture. I was like, wow, feels like forever ago.
I know, right?
Standing next to each other.
You know, it's interesting because Nikki's producing the show and her and I were having a conversation and I was talking about how, you know, training camp, end of July is going to be here before we know it. And a big reason why I wanted to have you on the show tonight and talk about, you know, the NFL, NFLPA and some of the things they're discussing and safety protocols and whatnot. But I'm thinking, I'm like, gosh, I can't even begin it. Like it's already July. I feel like March was just
no
yesterday.
Way to measure time. I feel
right? Like March,
day.
It feels like March was just yesterday when our lives were turned upside down, right?
I know. I mean, the only way I know it's different is because it's warm now and it was still snowing occasionally then. But otherwise, the days really all run one into another. And it's really hard to imagine that football is around the corner. And, you know, every year I would typically go to training camp, but everything is so different now. We don't even know exactly what's going to happen.
It's really wild. All right, well, let's dive into it. So, you know, NFLPA. I'm good friends with David Cantor, and I want to say you've met him. I mean, like he's usually when we go to the combine, you know, he's like the mayor of Prime, and he sits there. He has all these, you know, like crates of wine flown into Indianapolis. You know what I'm talking about, David. Anyway, I had him on the show the other day. And he literally, what he's doing, whenever the NFL and NFLPA have a Zoom, he sits in on it and then he sends me the meeting notes so that I could use for my show.
Lucky you.
I know. Exactly. Because he's in the Zoom where it happened.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah. Thanks. It just doesn't, at the end of the day, I'm very long-winded here. It just doesn't seem like the NFL and NFLPA are anywhere close to agreeing on a number of things that are going to make the players safe, feel safe, that like the end of July training camp start is a reality. Agree or disagree?
I don't have a definitive answer. I agree that it feels that way. I don't know if I agree that it's really as far apart, because we're going to hear about the things where they're at odds. But the other thing I would say is that I realize that July 28th is very close, but if you think about how much this COVID-19 pandemic and everything that we know about it, and what we know about the virus, what we know about the disease, what we know about how it spreads, who it affects, who it impacts, we've learned so much that 2 or 3 weeks is like a lifetime of information. And so I understand people feel like they want to get these things in place so they can plan a few weeks out. But the reality is that within a few weeks, things could change drastically in the country. We've seen that if you just go back a few weeks and look at what we're seeing in the surge of cases in the South. And, you know, when these protocol discussions and plans for football were being initially discussed, it was when the Northeast was the problem. And coming out of it, when the Northeast started to take a turn, it looked really hopeful, like, hey, we can get this together and maybe we're going to be in really good shape as a country, because that really is what's going to drive everything here. You know, it, as much as we'd like to think it's a bubble, there's no way that the NFL can function entirely inside a bubble, because you're talking about teams residing within their home states and traveling to one another to play games. So the context of what's happening in the country is really relevant here. And I think the fact that things have changed in certain parts of the country and that they're continuing to learn about how this disease behaves and what some of the ramifications are is what influences how these talks go.
It's here's another thing that I find, and I agree with you, right? I totally agree with you. I feel like, you know, us here in New York and New Jersey, we got hit hard. We got hit first. We did it right. people here still are wearing masks. Like, there's not a lot of Karens, right? Those are those, you know, women that have been labeled where they walk into.
I'm familiar.
Right? Like, there's very few Karens here in New York and New Jersey as opposed to like, everywhere else in the country. You know, but also today, reports out, like, so, for example, Philadelphia Eagles, no fans.
Right.
This coming season. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville Jaguars, Florida is a hot spot. Like, I every day I call my mom, Mama Mimi. She's on the show a lot, so people know who she is. I'll call, like, hey, do you feel safe? Like, what can I do? Do you want to leave Florida? Like, I'm so worried about my mom. Like, Florida is a hot spot. But meanwhile, mm-hmm. Jacksonville, oh, we're going to have 25% capacity. Just wear your mask.
Right.
I mean, it's just like, really? Like, really?
Wow. I mean, it's hard to even imagine. And think about if you're a team. Now, I know that they're looking at regional, you know, the schedule looks different because they're talking about keeping things, you know, regionally to make it make more sense. But imagine if you're a team, I don't know, you know, Seattle got hit hard but has come down to some degree. What if they have to go play Arizona? Who wants to go to Arizona right now? Just considering how strong the surge has been there recently. So it's more even than what they're just doing at their home facilities. And I think that's the challenge. You know, I've been actually looking at the protocols for all the different leagues coming back. Actually, I've been spending a lot of time on golf recently. Yes. Because they've managed to come back and do it pretty successfully, quite frankly. Now, they're at an advantage because social distancing, their sport lends itself to that. It's apples and oranges in terms of what's happening in the sport itself. But in terms of the contact points, trying to create really awareness and individual responsibility of all the people involved in making golf happen, very, and everyone's in. I really think you have to have that, whatever your league is. And we're seeing, you know, the NBA is getting underway in Orlando, and it looks like so far taking very seriously there. So the things are going to give sports the best chance of happening.
Stefania, I think we're, unfortunately, I think we have a bad connection. If it's okay with you, we're going to take a break, and we're gonna try to get you on a better connection. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. So let's do this. We'll take a break. Quick break. We come back. More for Stefania Bell, because this is what I want to do. I want to tee up for Stefania some of the things that the NFL and NFLPA are discussing. Like, for example, should COVID-19 be considered an injury? And that span, if you, of course, you know, if you follow Stefania Bell, you know, she's huge in fantasy. They do the fantasy show every Sunday morning. So I want to have a conversation there. Amongst a number of things that really need to be decided upon for that July 28th opening date for training camps to happen with the NFL. They need to decide quickly. That next, here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
NFLPA time is clicking, ticking, clicking, same thing. Stefania Bell back with us. Stefania, we got you, right?
Yes, you do. Okay. It sounded good to me, so I'm sorry that it was sounding bad.
No, it's all good. It's all good. You know, this is what happens. It's fine. So a few things. I want to tee this up for you in regard to some of the topics that, again, David Cantor had texted me. So explain to me how or why the NFL is not allowing players to exchange jerseys after the game, but yet they're willing for them to blood, sweat, you name it, for the four quarters within the game. But after the game, they can't exchange jerseys.
So a couple things. One is you need to remember that these guidelines are being agreed upon by NFL and NFLPA. So anything that ends up getting written into the rules, the Players Association has signed off on as well. And I think they've got some really some top experts on both sides and working with some of the top infectious disease folks in the country. So these are not randomly written. I would just put that out there as a blanket statement. I understand why that sounds silly when you hear it, but consider that possibly there will be a face shield protector in place. They would really like to have them wearing something like that. You can get into all the conversations about how that hasn't worked in the past. I know that the NFLPA at this point, it sounds like they're wanting to make them optional for players as opposed to required. But the bottom line is that what we think we understand about this virus is that viral load matters, meaning the more exposure, the more dangerous it is. And so anytime you have an opportunity to decrease that exposure, you take advantage of it. And we also know that it can live on certain surfaces for an extended period of time. So again, if you're exchanging something that where there might be virus, people have been sweating or there's blood in it, you know, who knows? Anything that has the potential to allow that virus to then get passed on and thus puts the person it's being passed to at more viral load than what they had experienced if that interaction didn't happen, that's a negative. So you try, yes, that's why you want separation on the bench, is why you want people wearing masks who aren't involved in the field of play. And it's why you talk about things like not having these post-game handshakes, conversations, or jersey exchanges, because you're just trying to make that one more point in time where you decrease the chances of exposure.
NFLPA wants daily testing, but the NFL wants every other day testing. Is that a financial situation, or is that concern in regard to the amount of tests that it would that they would need to test every player daily and employees, of course?
I actually don't know. You know, I don't know the answer as to why that difference exists. Certainly, you know, from the outside looking in, you could make the argument about availability of testing and feasibility of testing and getting, you know, would you get test results back fast enough to make it worthwhile testing the next day at the same time? In other words, if I'm making this up, but if I were to test at 10 a.m. one morning and my results come back the next day at 11, what's the point of me having taken that second test? Again, I'm not saying this is fact. I'm just throwing this out there as that could potentially be a concern. What we really need is a test that is sensitive and specific that returns results really quickly. That may be a question, is there the availability of being able to turn around a test that is not especially invasive? I mean, that's the other thing. Some of the best testing we have is the nasopharyngeal swabs. But what are the capabilities in terms of turning around the results quickly? I think if you're talking about a 24-hour turnaround, it's going to make it problematic to do testing every day. If we had better testing in place, there was a saliva-based test where you could get results quickly within an hour or two that were also tests that everybody was comfortable that they were sensitive and specific enough to live with. You know, the tests that are being granted these EUAs by the FDA have to fall within a certain sensitivity and specificity. So is it holding up to those standards, and can you get the results quick enough? That's certainly a challenge right now, just from a feasibility standpoint.
Stefania Bell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I'd say about maybe 2.5 months ago, I got tested. A good friend of mine, Ron Lombardi, who owns a restaurant here in Hoboken, Sorrelina, had 80 friends and family get tested through Quest Diagnostics. And so it was a blood test, and I got tested for COVID and antibodies. I came back negative. I got my test results back in less than 5 hours, Stefania. 5 hours.
Well, that's, you know, that, again, there's high variability between the, you know, depending on the, who is the test administrator, who's basically handling the results. I mean, look, this is a point of discussion, and I'm sure, given the fact that you're talking about these things on the regular, it's come up here too, but when we see lines of people in cars waiting to get tests in the community and being turned away after 6 or 7 hours because they couldn't get tested, it's hard to have conversations about daily testing and quick result turnaround for a special population. And I think that at some level that may factor into this as well. Have the labs made a promise that they can actually deliver on? We saw when baseball returned, they had a problem over the July 4th holiday weekend with test results not getting back as quickly as they were promised. So some players were showing up to take a test and their previous results were not back yet. I mean, these are real challenges, and I think everyone's trying to figure these things out as they go. It's hard to put a plan into place in a document and say, yes, we're going to do this, when you look at what's happening around you, even as these other sports leagues are trying to get started, and you see the glitches that are happening and that things may not be as straightforward as you'd like when you come up with the concept.
Last question for you, Stefania. And this is something else that's being discussed between the NFL and NFLPA, is will COVID be a football injury? Do you feel that if a player does come down COVID-19 positive, that should be listed as an injury?
Well, this gets so difficult, right? Because if players are living at home and maintaining regular activity, they're going to be exposed to people who are out in the community potentially, so that there's a chance for them to contract, to catch the virus and develop COVID-19 as a result. Is that the responsibility of the football team? And how are you going to prove it one way or another? We don't have perfect contact tracing. We are doing, everybody's doing the best they can, but it may be hard to determine where exactly a player contracted it. And so, you're going to see the argument come down on both sides of this. Now, I think they certainly deserve everything. If you go on, if you go on the injury list, if you will, for the week, if you're on the injury report, that's going to happen. We've seen it already with players who have illnesses that go on the injury report and are listed with an illness. I imagine that it would be the same thing, where they're listed on the injury report with an illness. But as far as, if that has a financial impact based on how they, contracted it, it's really hard to say.
Stefania, I really do. It's so great to hear your voice. I'm glad that you're healthy. I'm glad that you're safe. And we so appreciate your time this evening. I know you said you have an article that is about to come out on ESPN in regard to the research that you've done with a variety of leagues and how they are handling, handling the COVID-19 situation. Do you know when that is going to be released?
I don't know. I imagine it's going to come out tomorrow. It's actually, this one's very specific to golf with the Memorial Tournament coming up this week. I looked at the protocols that golf developed to get back in the game and sort of how the first few weeks have gone. The Memorial was going to be their first, where they thought they were going to have fans in attendance. They ultimately decided that wasn't going to happen. But aside from that decision, and I think it was a smart one for them, how they basically came up with their health protocols and how they're managing the other injuries and things that their athletes need in the presence of COVID-19. So, yes, I would appreciate if you checked it out.
Fantastic. Stefania, I'll definitely read it. And I love that you're reporting on golf right now because, it's my passion. I really do miss you, my friend. Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Stefania Bell joining us on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Peter Jennings joins us. Good friend out in Denver. How many Karens have you ran in, have you run into in Denver, Peter?
Anita, it's fun to be on and great to chat again. man, the Karen stuff. I'm not going to touch that. There's somehow this virus has become politicized, which is just crazy to me. I hope we can get everyone healthy and in a better place, and hopefully we'll have sports at some point. But it's a crazy time right now.
Your mouth to God's ears. How's that golf game?
Golf game was pretty good. I was one of the silver linings during quarantine. I was playing quite a bit of golf. I think it's a great way to get outside, and our club had a lot of measures in place to keep us safe, and got down to a 4 index, and now I'm back where I belong, is about a 7 to 8 index. So golf game's decent, but a little less actual golf as I'm focusing on the PGA Tour.
I'm jealous. So Peter created Fantasy Labs, which is just, I'm on that all the time. I have so much fun. And also is part of the Action Network and co-founder of a lot of DFS and in other markets and whatnot. And as I've been praising you all show, I think you're one of the best in the business. And we had an opportunity to meet and get to know each other in our time when you were a part of ESPN. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Memorial Thursday, Tiger back in action. Everybody's going to be watching now that Tiger's going to be teeing up. We know that he's won it here 5 times. What is it about this course, Peter, that fits Tiger's game to a T? No pun intended.
Love that. And Anita, thanks for the kind words. And we'll have to talk about your golf game before this is all over, too. I want to hear about that. But yeah, Memorial is an incredible course. Jack's Place, you can see this week, basically, you know, the majority of the top players in the world are here. We had incredible drama last week, and I think the course is going to play a lot different this week. Jack's super proud of it, and I think all the players respect Jack Nicklaus so much. And it's a great course. I mean, Tiger, you look at his course history, and he has incredible course history in so many places because he's the best golfer in the world for so long. So I think, you know, any course suits him pretty well. I think this is definitely a course that suits him better than others. Just scrambling is really important. And if you see some of the highlights from Tiger's career, a lot of them will be here, some incredible flop shots that he's hit, and just the creativity that he has around the greens and his iron play is a huge part of being successful at Memorial. So I think it's a really good course for Tiger, but I'm not as bullish as I normally would be, given that we haven't seen him for a long time. I know he looked really good in the match, but I'm gonna bank on guys that we have more recent history on than Tiger this week.
Yeah, it's but you know, people love betting on Tiger and they want to see him do well, and you know, he's like at the top of leaderboard come Sunday. It's always fun to watch, right?
Of course.
You know, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this, because and folks listening in, so the Memorial is this weekend. Last week was the Workday Charity Open, and it's being played on the same course, but there's changes that are being made to that course as we speak, right? So tee boxes are moving further back, so it's going to play a lot longer. Greens go from like an 11 to like a 13. You know, the rough is, they're going to let the rough grow out maybe an inch, 2 inches more. So it's going to be a lot more difficult. Now, Morikawa looked great. I love Morikawa. What a great young man. I just really huge fan of his. Justin Thomas looked good, of course, until, you know, he obviously couldn't get the deal done, you know, in the playoff holes. Hovland. So how do you answer someone to say, well, wait a minute, these guys did well last week. Why wouldn't I wager on them this week? Or why wouldn't I use this week?
It's a great question, and you highlighted it perfectly. The course will play differently. It's going to be firmer and faster, and all the changes that you mentioned. So I expect scoring to be much lower, or I guess higher, depending on how you look at it. I don't think there'll be as many birdies, and I think it'll be a much more challenging course this week for these guys, where par will be at a bigger premium relative to last week, where it was kind of a birdie fest. So there's that dynamic that you have to wait. But it is still the same course. We've never had this before, and recent form is a huge part of trying to project how golfers are going to do. So not only do you have last week as the recent form, but you also have the same course, albeit it's going to be set up differently. So that's been a challenge in trying to how much to weight that. I think you do weight last week quite a bit, but yeah, it's tricky. And to answer your question pertaining to the players that did well last week, I mean, Colin Morikawa and JT are probably my two favorite golfers on tour. Very bullish on Morikawa. I think he's not only an amazing golfer, but an amazing human and just a huge asset for the PGA Tour. So I was thrilled to see him win. And I'm just such a huge fan. So I still think he's a great setup this week. I think JT's set up really well. I actually would knock down Victor Hovland just a little bit. Victor's been probably, outside of Bryson, maybe even including Bryson, the best tee to green during this COVID swing. But the one bugaboo for Victor Hovland is his chipping and his around the green stats. And I think this week, with the new setup with firmer greens, tougher fairways, longer rough, I think scrambling is going to be at a premium. So I would actually knock Victor Hovland down just a little bit. Very bullish on him long term. But of the guys who did exceptionally well last week, he'd be the guy that I'd say, okay, his scrambling is his one weakness, and I think that's going to be really important this week. So wouldn't surprise me if he went out and played well, because he's literally, I think, number one tee to green on the COVID swing. But the scrambling is so imperative this week that I'll knock him down out of the guys that did really well last week.
You had me at bugaboo. So Peter Jennings joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, so some of the metrics that I looked at in trying to handicap this field this week, okay? Driving accuracy, 11 of the last 17 winners were ranked in the top 10 in driving accuracy. Strokes gained on approach, 11 of the last 23 winners ranked in the top 5 strokes gained on approach. I also looked at par 3 scoring, par 5 scoring, sand save percentage. Just to kind of, and also dudes who are good on bent grass. Because here's one. All those metrics I just shared with you, Daniel Berger is up, like he's probably as the one golfer who's ranked the highest in all of the metrics that you need to win on this course. Berger is like at the top, right? But dude's horrible on bent grass. So, you know, so instead, so in it, probably for the first 30 minutes of me doing my research, I was like, oh man, I'm all in on Berger. And then I read like just how horrific he is on bent grass. So I have him finishing. I'll probably buy into him on like finishing the top 10. Like how significant is that? I guess my question is to you is how significant is 13s on bent grass going to be to guys who typically aren't good on bent grass?
Well, first of all, I love all the research. I love the way you're attacking this from an analytical perspective. That's always great to hear, and one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of yours. So I love your passion for golf, and I love that. And I think you're looking at the right things. I think iron play and approach and then finding fairways is the key this week. Pertaining to Berger, he's an interesting one because his 2019 stats are pretty bad, but that's because he had the wrist injury. So I kind of tend to throw those out the window. And you look at his recent form, I mean, he's been unbelievable. Victor Hovland's leading tee to green, but hasn't been putting well. The guy who's been playing the best is either Bryson or Berger. So he checks all the boxes. And then you bring in the grass type thing where there's definitely some signal of that with certain guys. And then in other times, the grass type tends to be noisy from a back testing perspective. So I don't know what to do with the grass type. It does give me a little bit of pause, but I certainly would still feel comfortable with Berger. But that, you can say that about basically the top 20 guys here this week, with the exception of maybe Tiger for me. I mean, it's really hard to make a bad argument against all the top end guys. And Tiger, the only reason I'm not going to be financially invested in him, we'll still be rooting for him, of course, is that he hasn't played in a long time competitively. And historically, that's not good for golfers. But he's Tiger Woods, and he could easily do well. And from a betting perspective, you always have to pay the Tiger tax too. So I'll be fading him there. But Berger's a great golfer, and it's such a compelling top end of the field. Just so many great golfers, which says all the great things about the PGA Tour, which is an amazing place right now.
They certainly are. All right, so let's end on this. I'm going to share with you where I'm going to be spending my money. And you give me thumbs up, thumbs down, and then you share with us the guys that you're really digging heading into Thursday. How's that?
Perfect.
Okay. So I'm putting money on Shoffley and Answer to win. Shoffley, I could get it 25-1. I love Answer heading into this tournament. Get him at 50-1. Top five, I've got DeChambeau, I've got Webb, and I got Cantlay. Top 10, I got Berger. Top 20, I love Paul Casey at plus 275. And did you see the video of Finau?
206.
Oh! Can I just say, I love Tony Finau. I think he's awesome. So I'm a little biased there. Lucas Glover, plus 188 to finish in the top 30. And then here's the thing. Furyk, have you looked at his stats? Dude is
number one
in driving accuracy. Hold on. I got to pull up my notes for this because it's ridiculous. Number one in driving accuracy, number one in greens in regulation percentage, 18th in strokes gained on approach, 45th in strokes gained tee to green. 2-1 to finish in the top 40. Peter, is that not easy money?
That's my favorite bet out of all the ones that you just mentioned. Yes. I had a bunch of money on Furyk last week, and it was devastating betting NDFS. It was devastating to see him miss the cut on the number when I thought minus one was going to be the cut. That was an expensive move on the cut line for me personally, but I love the Furyk bet. Out of everything you mentioned, that's probably my favorite, but starting at the top, Xander, I mean, he does extremely well, at the top. I encourage anyone who's betting, if you have the option to make bets at multiple books, the best thing you can do, especially in outright, is shop for the best price. I've seen actually some better numbers on Xander, but I do like Xander quite a bit, and I expect the line to move. So I think that's pretty sharp. And then Answer is probably my second favorite bet out of the whole group. So ridiculous. He had just an absurd amount of greens at Heritage, including 18 of 18 in his final round. One of the best ball strikers on tour, a name that the average golf fan might not know, but is going to be a household name. And I think 50-1 is a great price on Answer. That's actually a really good number. So like that quite a bit. Top fives, you mentioned Bryson. Bryson, to me, this week is a little expensive. I like Bryson. I think what he's doing is changing the game. I love his analytical approach. His distance is a huge weapon. But he's the number one expensive guy on DraftKings. Depending where you're betting, he's either a favorite or one of the two or three favorites. And I don't think this necessarily is the best setup for him because of the scrambling. He plays the same length irons and wedges, and I think that suits him really well on his approach game. But either you're a golfer, you know, being around the greens, it's got to be tough to chip with a 7-iron length wedge. And that shows up in the stats for Bryson. The one area he's not great is around the green. So I actually don't love Bryson as a top five bet. I think any week he's a good bet relatively just because he's so good. And he's clearly a top two or three player in the world now. I mean, top five, no matter what. But that would be one bet that I probably would say thumbs down on. Who else did you say at top five? Is that your only top five?
I like Webb and I like Cantlay.
Can't argue with either of those. I think those are both really interesting. Cantlay looked really good on Sunday too, so that's a strong signal. All these guys are so freaking good. So I'm kind of up.
I feel horrible because I could talk about this with you for hours, but I'm kind of up against a break. I'd love to hear. Give me three, four, five of the guys that you really like heading into this week.
Sure, I'll keep it concise. I'm on John Rahm again. Best round, TD Green, Sunday that we've seen in a long time. Bullish on him. Billy Horschel, Jim Furyk, Abraham Answer for sure as well. Those are some of my favorite names this week.
Oh, well, okay. That was easy. You asked about my game. I'm hitting my irons the best I ever have, but something's gone wrong with my driver. Like, the last two rounds I've played, I finished the back nine with my 3-wood off the tee. So I need
a driver. A hook or a slice?
It's not even that. I'm not getting distance out of it. I think it has something to do with my left foot. I'm driving the ball further with my three wood than I am my driver. And my driver is the best part of my bag. I like average 250 a drive, and I'm lucky if my driver gets past. How embarrassing is this? I'm lucky if my driver goes further than DeChambeau's 9-iron.
Well, DeChambeau's hitting the ball farther than...
190 yards with his 9-iron. I mean, Peter, come
crazy.
On. I know. He needs to pee in a cup. All right, Peter, I'm going to let you go.
Thank you so much. This is great.
No, it's so good. It's so good to hear your voice. I'm so glad you're healthy. Your golf game sounds great, and we appreciate your time.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.